Welcome to the For Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 20th of July, recording at 5 p.m. British Summer Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. But first, a quick review of the week. In terms of stock markets, we have had continued strength in the Asian stock markets. European markets have extended their ranges for the most part. Financials within Europe and also Wall Street have been under pressure, reflecting the subprime and other financial concerns. And as I speak today, both Wall Street and the European markets are down, but Wall Street off some new highs for respective indices seen yesterday. Government bonds, they've been steady this week, and that's continued today. They're mostly within ranging patterns, but showing, well, beginning to break up out of those patterns. Those are bond prices, of course, and where they haven't broken upwards, showing the potential to perhaps do so. And in currencies, well, the dollar has stayed pretty soft generally, and so has the yen, although the dollar is even weaker than the Japanese currency. Now, in metals, we've seen a resurgence of interest here this week. This is spread across the industrial metals. And we have also seen it in the, which are all up today, and we've also seen it in the precious metals. And gold, as I speak, is up another $6 here at 683.50. That's gold bullion. And soft commodities, we've seen some retreating there in the grain and beans market. Overall, and also in cotton, which had had a pretty strong performance earlier on. Oil has been mostly firm, although it's down a little bit at the moment, as is natural gas. Okay, so what's going on here in terms of where we stand in this cycle right now? A lot of people are concerned about the length of time that markets have been going up. And I even had an email on that subject from a pre-subscriber in here today. And the only point that I will make on this is that bull markets do not die of old age. They are assassinated, usually by central banks, usually by monetary policy. There can be other factors, there can be events, but old age is the least thing that I would worry about. Now, bullish phases do climb a wall of worry. That's well known, and that's healthy, actually. If a lot of people are worried, there's probably unfulfilled upside potential. If a lot of people are worried, they probably aren't all that long and leveraged. The danger periods in terms of sentiment occur, I think, when we get the widespread optimism. Now, there are all different ways that people are going to measure this, but you know, you go to the financial channels, you look in the newspapers, and there's been plenty of crisis talk, at least in the West. And the focal point of that those crisis talks have concerned subprime, not so much in terms of what it's going to do to consumer spending, or what it allegedly might do to consumer spending. That was the big concern at the beginning of the year. And now, though, we're seeing that the real problems, such as they are, reside in the hedge fund community, and no doubt also in and amongst some of the unleveraged pension funds that had already rather naively picked up that dodgy debt. And the banking sector is reflecting some of the concerns that are also being felt concerning subprime. And it's a good excuse for people to to vote with their feet in here. But how important is that overall? Well, it's not unimportant, but it can certainly roil markets. It can certainly lead to reactions and possibly even a correction, although I think that's an outside chance, as I said earlier in the week in one of my comments. Now, in terms of overall background, I feel that some markets, well, again, people have talked about bubbles. Let's deal with that. A lot of people have been quite concerned about the number of bubbles that they see. Well, there are always some bubbles, as I've said before, and the only exception to that, if there's going to be one, is following a global recession or during a global recession. So there are almost always bubbles somewhere. But I think that really there's a whole lot of exaggeration that goes on in the score. Okay, China, that's a bubble. Are the industrial metals a bubble? Well, I don't think so. They've seen some pretty meteoric rises. Were U.S. house prices a bubble? Yes, I would go along with that. And maybe U.K. house prices. I'd include U.K. house prices as well. But I, more importantly, I look around the world and at some of the stock markets that we're interested in, and I see some quite reasonable value there, not bubble conditions. Yes, the China A-share index is at bubble valuations, the mainland China indices, but a lot of that is due to people being locked in that market, and that is only going to come crashing back if the Chinese authorities assassinate it. So far, they've been trying to control it and doing a rather good job of it overall, and I'd be less concerned about bubble conditions in China in that environment and against the background of a strong Chinese economy than I would if China's whole financial structure looked unstable because it had big deficits and growth was suspect. So, really, if there's anything we need to worry about, I feel that sadly it's the USA economy, which is much higher risk than it should be, and that if there's any real financial problem in our short to medium term future, I think it's likely to emanate from the USA. And in terms of subprime, there's some contagion there, and if that weighs heavily on Wall Street, which has been quite relaxed about it so far, although some weakness is shown in here today, but I think that has more to do with some corporate profits that have disappointed a little bit, and perhaps some profit-taking following new highs. But if Wall Street were to go into a medium-term correction, then that the leash effect would come into play, and it would pull some markets down. Now, I've said that I think that correction at this time is less than a 50-50 possibility. I think what's much more likely is that we get further reactions and ranging phases. That's the environment that I forecast all along, and that also helps to correct overextensions relative to the 200-day moving averages. And again, I'll repeat that point that we are in the third year of a U.S. presidential election cycle, and historically that is the most bullish year of all if you look at the last 60 to 100 years or so. So, and we have the global economy synchronized in a period of economic expansion. We've seen some lessening of the inflationary pressures despite some surging commodity prices and oil being back up near its highs. But that's near its highs in U.S. dollars, and the dollar has really been quite weak here. So all in all, yes, there are some obvious risks around, but I'm not ready to abandon this ship in terms of my positions. My positions, incidentally, which veteran subscribers will know well, but I reiterate for new subscribers, are heavily overweight in two areas, and that those two areas are Asian emerging markets, and with my big positions being in China, in my biggest positions in India, which is my favorite stock market for the very long term, China, and Thailand. And then I have general exposure through general funds. And my so there's that sector, very heavily overweight there. My next big overweight position, which accounts for almost all the rest of my portfolio investment activities, is in the resources area, in primarily in industrial resources. But I also have gold-related interests through shares and through funds. They had been lagging considerably, having done well in earlier years. They had certainly been lagging over the last 12 months, but have picked up quite a bit recently. And you might have seen that Merrill Lynch Gold and General Fund, which I posted yesterday. And which I do hold. I hadn't looked at it in quite a while because gold had been so dull. And that's a sterling-denominated fund. Sterling's a hard currency, so its performance is not just due to dollar weakness. And I was very pleasantly surprised at how well that has done. Well, that's down to good management in that fund, and I congratulate them. But the moving back to this global economy and global markets, the big themes that we have advocated here at Fuller Money, really since 2003 and earlier in terms of the resources theme, and the big themes have been the global infrastructure development. That and the overall synchronized global economic recovery, which is r really the first genuinely sy synchronized global economic expansion, I should say, not recovery, the global economic expansion in human history. In other words, you go back over the last 150 years and most of the world's countries weren't even on the radar as far as participation was concerned. It was all in the OECD countries. So we had Europe, we had North America generally leading the way, and we had Japan and some of the smaller ASEAN countries in Asia. And that was pretty much it. Well, Canada and Australia and New Zealand. But these are small. Those latter ones are small population countries. So really, when we had a synchronized global economic recovery, and as you know, up until 2003, we'd gone at least 10 years, the world had gone at least 10 years without one of those synchronized global economic advances. But if you go back to previous decades, when the global economy was synchronized in a period of expansion, we were really talking about 1 billion people at best being involved in that. Today, it's most of the world, with these huge population countries such as China and India now leading that global economic expansion. Now, the infrastructure demand reaches all corners of the globe where humans habitate. And I see this running on for really a very long time. It will be punctuated at some point by a recession in all probability. I do not feel that's imminent. But this could run for decades, barring some sort of environmental accident of biblical proportions, which I'm not in the business of predicting. Although we could all come up with a script, excuse me, for that if we chose to do so. Hopefully it doesn't happen. Now, the beauty of this theme, the emerging markets, and I've concentrated especially in the Asian emerging markets, but emerging markets such as Brazil, are phenomenal. The South American region in general, the resources exporters that are not run by kleptocrats are doing exceptionally well. And I expect that to continue. Even a number of African countries now are doing extremely well. South Africa did during previous global economic expansion phases, but far more countries in Africa are now participating, which really never did before to any great extent. And the feedback loop that we see is that the globalization and the adoption of capitalism by so many countries that previously had moribund economic systems is generating a huge amount of growth and demand for resources. The demand for resources is creating enormous wealth in the resources producing countries, whether developed or under or developing. And so as they prosper from the higher prices for these materials, they then go into their own infrastructure development programs, and also their middle class grows and the consumer demands grow. And so that creates a number of shortages for resources, which drives prices higher overall, but not sufficiently so to jeopardize growth, at least not yet. And I don't think it will. What will jeopardize growth at some point is that we will see inflationary pressures pick up. This is usually the case when we get a synchronized global economic expansion. And we have also had plenty of money printing, and that has sown the seeds for an overall inflationary cycle. The mitigating factor, of course, is the competition created by globalization, which has mostly helped to keep wages down. It won't forever. And also, we've had the accelerated march of technology, which has helped to keep inflationary pressures down. But this is still quite a bullish long-term scenario for the growth areas, and that's where I want to be. And that will be, of course, in the emerging markets. I particularly like the Asian emerging markets because I feel they're less risky. And it is also exceptionally good for resources plays. Now, long-dated government bonds are rallying at the moment, but they're in a secular bear market, which began in June 2003. You can see that in the charts, and it's something we've been saying for a long time. Currently, the bear market is in remission. We're seeing a rally in long-dated government bond prices, so yields are falling back a little bit. But they will spike again at some point, and that's probably when people are less concerned about subprime and knock-on financial effects, and the global economy is beginning to strengthen above that approximately 4.5-5% global growth rate, average global growth rate that we see. When I won't try to anticipate when the next spike in yields occurs, but when it does, that will cause problems. It will certainly cause a headwind for stock markets, and it will also cause consternation among central banks, which may well ratchet up short-term interest rates to try to head off growing and rising inflationary pressures. My best guess is that's not going to happen to any serious extent before 2009, 2010 at the earliest. We'll see. Obviously, this is something that we discuss, if not every day, every week, pretty much. Now, therefore, I don't really like these long-dated government bonds for investment terms. I much prefer the equities, and so do most other people. I think there will be some shorting plays in the long-dated government bonds. Not at the moment, as I say, they are rallying. And the only time I would contemplate going into that sector would be when stock markets look particularly vulnerable. For instance, when a bear market next beckons for equities, and again, I don't see that happening on the current course we're on. I don't see that happening before 2009, 2010 at the earliest. But then that would be a good time to be to have some positions in long-dated government bonds, as they would get a big medium-term year or two. Technical recovery. In terms of currencies, we have two weak currencies. They are the Japanese yen and the US dollar. The US dollar is by far the more fundamentally vulnerable of the two currencies due to the, we'll just take the debt and deficit figures, and that's reason enough. But interest rate differentials have favored the dollar over the yen for several years, and that's been reflected in the price action overall. And of course, the yen has been the darling of the carry trade. I don't see that ending anytime soon, but I do not expect the US dollar to go on appreciating against the Japanese yen indefinitely. As I say, the dollar is the more fundamentally vulnerable of the two currencies. And that eventually will be reflected in the price, particularly when Japanese interest rates move higher. And also, if US interest rates come lower, as would be the case if the contagion from subprime does start to weigh more heavily on the U.S. economy than it has to date. Industrial resources prices, they will remain very, very volatile, but are in secular bull markets. Within those secular bull markets, we see lead now accelerating to what will be a medium-term peak, a lengthy medium-term peak before too long. It's the sort of action that we saw with copper last year when it spiked upwards, and that we saw earlier this year with nickel. Now, some of the commodities, some of the metals, rather, that had had spikes and then corrections came back are now strengthening once again. Tin is among them and doing very, very well. Nickel is picking up, may well have bottomed. It's at minimum, it's commenced the bottoming out process after a very big pullback. But all this is taking place within a secular bull market. Gold looks poised to spring a surprise, in my view. It's been an underperforming asset. I wrote about it yesterday, and I've written about it again today, so I won't spend more time on that right now. But I do think that we will be surprised by the strength that gold and platinum and probably silver, spill over into palladium as well, will see over the second half of this year. Suffice it to say that led by platinum, they show the very big ranging consolidation patterns that have led to explosive upside moves in other assets. So you could describe it as Buggin's turn. These have underperformed for quite some time, and they're cheap. They're cheap relative to most other assets and likely to appreciate. The agricultural commodities depend mainly on weather. Demand is the constant, and it's going up. We can be much more precise about what's happening with demand for all of these resources. It is rising in line with the synchronized global economic expansion and the huge infrastructure demands and the rising middle class, which leads to a change in diet favoring more protein, and that bumps up consumption for agricultural commodities and also livestock. Now, we do see this strong rising demand, but the big variable, of course, is supply. And that depends on weather more than anything else. And it looks as if the crops in the U.S., well, so far, I should put it that way, so far the crops in the U.S. appear to be doing well. The worst concerns, fears over weather have not been realized. So that may mitigate inflationary pressures for a good few months more. And crude oil, last but not least, again, secular bull market. I would expect some resistance up near last year's highs, and we really have rallied right up within very, very close to those previous highs. And we've seen gasoline pause near its highs of last year. I wouldn't be surprised if crude oil did the same here in coming weeks. Natural gas looks rather cheap by comparison, may pick up, but probably the energy run is close to a pause in here. But also, this is also very much in a secular bull market, and I do expect energy prices to be considerably higher in a year's time, but they won't go there in a straight line. And I think that's pretty much it, folks. So, just say, well, it's been an interesting, certainly an interesting week. They usually are. Have a fabulous weekend, and I'll look forward to discussing markets with you again next week. All the best.